Blog Talk Radio.
Boxing fans, this is Rope-A-Dope Radio. I'm your host, Chris Carlson. We got a lot to talk about on the show that almost didn't happen, actually. I was having a hell of a time with Blog Talk today, trying to schedule the show on and off throughout the day, but we got it scheduled. I did have to cancel a guest, but that's okay. We'll reschedule them in the future. But I'll tell you what, every once in a while, I'll warn the hardcore boxing fans out there from a weekend that, you know, is under the radar. You know, a weekend that doesn't have the huge matchups where there's two top guys or well-known guys going head-to-head or a big triple header on a network or something like that. Basically a marquee fight. We did have a Showtime fight this weekend on a Saturday, but the main event wasn't a marquee fight. But I'll tell you what, this last weekend, under the radar weekend, no doubt about it. Showtime Champion Boxing had a solid triple header. The main event, like I said, wasn't necessarily, I mean, it had a big name, Lucas Matisse, and with a big punch, and he showed that big punch against Dallas Jr., but Dallas Jr. was a late fill-in, a solid guy, but just not necessarily a top level at that deep 140 division. But Showtime had a nice card that had a wide variety, some good fights, a young fighter getting tested, and just a KO, just a concussion-type KO, not to bring that up. We know that's a serious topic in sports today, but just a punishing, vicious shot. One-punch knockout, counter-punch at that by Matisse. Obviously, Showbox had a classic matchup, a young prospect going against a veteran guy who's coming off a pretty good performance and a decent undercard there. And then Friday night fights had Vera and Zin Zurich, two guys that are at crossroads in their careers. That was undefeated for quite some time. And Brian Vera, wow, I mean, here's a guy that's really come from some hard losses, but he's coming back. He got the big win over Mora. He's gotten some solid wins over the last years. Yeah, he's taken it on the chin. Yeah, he's lost. But he always comes to fight. ESPN Friday Night Fights from last Friday was big, you know, a big deal, too. And then today, actually, late last night or early this morning, however you want to look at it, Daniel Deal and Anthony Mundine fought in their rematch. And that was pretty much a one-sided match. But I'll tell you what, we had ourselves a great weekend. I mean, it was very solid. You had underdogs, you had late fill-ins winning fights, you had an underdog winning a fight. I mean, just a lot of things happened. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to start the show with recap. And also, though, I mean, what the heck? Okay. We're having a little issues with the chat. But either way, I mean, there is so much to talk about in the line of upcoming fights on the fight schedule that are starting to fill up when it comes to March and April and May. Lots of fights. I mean, Rios and Alvarado Part 2 just got finished. I'll tell you the date and I'll tell you where. you know, Lamont Peterson news, Kessler and Frotch. We knew last week that that's a done deal. Now we have a date in a place. So I'm telling you, man, it's starting to really fill up. We've heard some complaints. I've seen some boxing forums and journalists saying, you know, I'm not really happy with the spring, you know, schedule, but it takes a while. Remember, we're just now getting out of February. Well, we're not quite out of February, actually. So just remember that it does take a little bit of time, and now we're really starting to fill up this spring schedule. Danny Garcia made news earlier this week officially. Over the weekend, we heard about the bruised rib. You know, we hear a withdrawal, we hear a pull out, but, you know, it is a withdrawal just from this fight, but it is a postponement. So the card will be, you know, it's still alive. So there's just a lot to talk about. Of course, we'll talk about the upcoming fight schedule as well. And Abner Mars, Nonito Donaire, just a lot of things to talk about. The saga continues with that. That $3 million offer, not only was an offer, but it came over as an offer contract / offer. So we're going to talk about that. It looks like Bob Arum has already, you know, made a different fight in the meantime before the negotiations were even finished, and that doesn't surprise me at all. But so there is a lot to talk about tonight. Like I said, I did have problems scheduling the show. Luckily, I was able to get through it and get it scheduled, but I did have to, reschedule the guest that I was going to have on, because I didn't want to have any issues to where I just couldn't reschedule the show, or, you know, I couldn't schedule the show tonight. But long story short, it's a Blog Talk issue. If you've heard the show, you definitely know that, you know, you can have some issues from time to time. But let's start with some recap, and look, why not start with the man at 140 that everybody wants to see in action, and why not, right? Lucas Matisse from Argentina. He's part of the Argentina wave that includes Sergio Martinez, who's really at the top of that class of Argentines. Of course, Maidana and Abregu, a couple other young guys are coming up. But, man, I'm telling you, this guy has so much power. I mean, he landed a looping left hand early in the first round. You know, Dallas Jr. was landing some grazing shots, nothing big. But, you know, you're starting to see Matisse, he was starting to reach him. And you could see in the first exchange, once Dallas got hit kind of clean, and he wanted to try to punch back in that exchange, he started to hold a little bit on the inside. But, man, did he get knocked out cold with a counter right hand after, and it was right on the jaw, after ducking a jab from Dallas Jr., right on the money. What a great punch by Lucas Matisse. Sent him out. I mean, he hit him, and then he tried to hit him with a couple other shots, but it didn't matter. It didn't matter by that time because he was out and down and out. And luckily he was okay. It didn't look like of course he was shaken by the knockout and even walking out of there with his trainer. You know, he definitely, Virgil Hunter, he could tell he was still shaken. So hopefully, you know, he heals up and everything like that. But Lucas Matisse, man, he really put it down this week, and I couldn't believe the knockout. Not necessarily that it won by knockout, because after all, you know, Hank Lundy was supposed to be the guy who, was going to fight him. And that was a good fight, but a showcase fight. It was against a boxer who would have probably been in the fight for quite a while, but a guy that likes to open up for a guy that has hand speed and skills, he always opens up, and, you know, he's kind of chinny. He gets knocked down a lot in this fight. So, you know, that was the original fight, which people had their issues with that, but, you know, it was a showcase fight, so it just turned into another showcase fight. Mike Dallas Jr. Is face solid guys, but he's not top-tier guy, you know what I mean? So it is what it is, but Matisse, you know, I thought he'd last longer than this. I thought it'd be more like 5, 6, 7 rounds or something like that, at least 5 rounds. But Matisse, wow, man, he really made another name for himself. He's been making a name for himself for quite some time now, even in a loss against Zab Judah, and a loss that shouldn't count for sure against Devin Alexander. You can at least debate a tight fight with Zab either way, no matter how you saw that. So, man, what a great counter at that right hand, right on the jaw. I mean, you got to love that from a Tse. CT, man, what's going on? How you doing, buddy?
Hey, what's up, Chris? How you doing tonight?
Man, I'm doing good. And what do you got to say about Matisse? Yeah, he landed a looping left early in the round, and you could see once they actually started exchanging some punches, it didn't seem like Dallas Jr. wanted a whole lot, but then the counter right hand after ducking a jab, I mean, it's going to get real dangerous if Matisse can counter as well coming in, because he actually is pretty – he likes to come at you, and he gets hit plenty, but he does – come with a tight guard, goes to the body, jabs pretty well. What did you think overall of that right hand that landed? But just the overall, I mean, in one round, just destroyed a pretty solid guy. It was a showcase fight. But, man, Lucas Matisse is just keep living up to that beast mode type guy.
I just thought it was a perfect pullback right hand, perfect counterpunch. Now, what makes it so scary for, like, the 140-pound division, this guy is getting better each fight. I see, you know, I'm getting, you know, and progressing so much of a better fighter. And he's pretty good technically. He has a good jab. He's pretty patient, and he knows where to place his punches. And he's so heavy-handed. He can hit you with either hand and put you out. And just, like, you know, Herman Hank Lundy is lucky it wasn't him that night. But yeah, this guy's pretty scary. I mean, all the 140-pound division is taking key, and, you know, like I said, he's getting better with each fight. And, you know, whoever he faces next, if it's the winner out of Garcia and Judah, that'll be good, too. I would like to see him fight the winner out of Rios and Alvarado, especially if it's Rios again. I think him versus Matisse is just, I don't know, if I can ever take 12 rounds of those two banging at each other, because, you know, both heavy-handed fighters, they come forward, and they both like action. So I like to see him fight Rios, too. But Matisse is very, very good. He's one of those fighters, you know, everyone's going to try to avoid if they could. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And, I mean, you hit it on the head. That fight would be crazy to the point where you just wonder maybe they'd have to take a year off after that fight, no matter who won in that fight, because, man, that would be crazy. And, you know, he got the job done. Dallas Jr. has shown that he's a good fighter. He's a solid fighter. Nothing crazy, nothing, you know, world top level, world class. I mean, he's definitely world class, I'd say, because he's fought some pretty solid guys. He pulled some upsets, but, you know, he's not the top of the line guy. But, you know, it is what it is. And when you're put in this situation, you got to take care of business. And he definitely took care of business. And, you know, with Lamont Peterson, it's something I'm going to get into a little later in the show, but with Lamont Peterson now with Golden Boy, what do you think about that fight? I mean, it does sound like they want to get that Amir Khan, Danny Garcia rematch out of the way and move on from that. So imagine if in the fall or something like that, Matisse against Lamont and then to have Danny Garcia, if he were to get through Zab, and get over this, you know, rib injury that he has, and Amir Khan right there, if they could have that on a doubleheader and the winner, you know, the winner takes on, you know, each other, that would be a nice lineup, because then you could get Matisse Amir, Danny Garcia Matisse, and you never know, Lamont could pull the upset. What do you think about that, CT? I kind of like that card, and then that would get a lot of things accomplished for all four of the fighters.
Yeah, I think Lamont Peterson will show Matisse a lot of different looks. I think Lamont Peterson is very underrated. I think he's a very good boxer, and he makes very good adjustments in the ring. He can fight multiple ways. So I think if he ever fought Matisse, that would be interesting. I almost would be a toss-up, but, you know, just the simple fact the way Lamont Peterson has a game plan, A, B, and C, we've seen him plenty of times versus I forgot the guy's name. I think he might be Dominican, where Peterson stopped him late You know, I saw adjustments when he fought Ortiz. He makes adjustments when he fought Khan. You know, he's very good in the ring. I think he has overall very good boxing skills. So if he ever fought Matisse, it would be a really good fight. I would like to see, you know, Khan versus Garcia again. Just mainly because, you know, with Khan's speed, I think, to be honest with you, the fight against Judah is going to be a little bit iffy for Garcia at times because, you know, I think Judah's going to give Garcia a little bit of trouble. You know, I could see him hurting Garcia in that fight. But, I mean, I'll get into that, you know, when that fight comes on during that week. But I see that being a pretty good fight itself. So, you know, how this junior welterweight division is stacked, it's probably the best division in boxing right now. And I'm just looking forward to all these fights that can make it happen.
Well said, and it is because you still have some guys from 135 that's going to join it here soon. So that's just to add depth to the whole thing. And, yeah, man, I mean, I think it's doable because then you have kind of the best of both worlds. When you talk about this, you know, when we talk about matchups and who should fight who and all that, you have to, I mean, as a fan, you'd like to see every matchup you could talk about, you know, but it just doesn't work that way. You got to work to build the certain things. And you know, Matisse still has, you know, some gaining to do as far as, you know, gaining fans and attention and this is a good way to do it. I mean, his last quite some time now he's been putting in work. I mean, last August he had a great fight with a guy that was a tough guy. He dropped him a bunch of times. It was a two-way fight. It was a competitive fight, but he got the job done. And I think you're right about the Danny Garcia fight against Zab Judah. You know, the one thing about Zab is, you know, we want Danny Garcia. A lot of people saying Danny Garcia and Matisse. Okay, well, Matisse and Zab Judah, no matter how you scored that fight, that still was a tight fight. You know, I don't care who you had winning, but it was a tight fight. So the same guy we want Matisse to fight, or Danny Garcia to fight, and Matisse, you can't forget about Zab Judah. And I know Zab Judah in big fights, he squandered the opportunities, being outskilled, not mentally into the fight. However you want to say it, and however, you know, it happened, it happens. No doubt about it. He's been on a roll of that. But the thing is, what you can't say is the guy has skill, power, and, you know, he's a contender at the weight class. I don't care what you say about him, but he is a contender because he constantly fights either former champions or contenders that are unbeaten or young and up and coming, and he knocks them out. So he's definitely a contender. And like I said, he fought Matisse very close. Okay, I thought Matisse beat Devin Alexander. The Zab Judah is a much tighter fight. But now you look at Lucas Matisse, and it's the last 10 fights, he's knocked his opponents down 20 times in those fights, which is just ridiculous. So I think, long story short, Lamont Peterson signing there, he has a fight coming up. He's obviously got to get by Holt. Amir Khan has one in April. He has to get by whoever he has to fight. Danny Garcia has to get by Zab. I'd assume Matisse would fight again. You know, why not, right? I think it would be another showcase-type fight against a guy maybe a little more, you know, known, I guess you could say. But Lamont Peterson, in the fall, Lamont Peterson, you know, and Matisse and Danny Garcia and Amir Khan, that would be a great matchup. Obviously, Amir Khan and Lamont and Danny would be great, too. I'm not trying to hack that or nothing like that, but we'll see. We'll see how that goes because, man, I can't wait for him to get a big fight, and obviously a lot of people are in the same, you know, the same boat as me. I mean, he definitely deserves it. But, you know, it is the nature of the beast now that this fight got set back a little bit between Garcia, you know, and Zab. That's obviously going to put a damper on things. It has to, if you think about it, because, you know, Amir Khan isn't going to fight in the summer. He's going to fight in late April, and then he won't be, you know, ready for a fight till November. So, that's just how it's going to go this year. So we'll see if that can be lined up, and we'll see if, you know, let's say April 27th, you take May and June off, July, August. I mean, they could fight in August or in late July, Batista and Garcia, and still have that Amir Khan. But if they want to do the Amir Khan rematch so bad, my guess is they're not going to put him in with him. But I do think that it will happen. It definitely will happen within, I'd say, about a year's time. I think it'll happen no matter what. But I'm really looking forward to seeing what they got. You know, there is a lot of talent at 140. And it's not all, you know, there's only a couple guys over at top rank, and they're fighting each other now, again, for the rematch. So even if it's an outside guy at 140, that's fine too, you know, and that's what it may be. And who knows? I mean, don't be surprised if it is Hank Lundy, to be honest with you, if he could figure out his contract issues. But either way, you never know. So I have been having a little problem. People are saying, even right now, that I'm kind of choppy right now, that they're not hearing me that clear. TT, can you hear me clear?
A couple. It chopped up for like a couple seconds, but I can hear you a little bit. Pretty
okay.
Good now.
All right, well. We'll see what happens here. Like I said, I did have problems scheduling the show, so you never know. I may have problems tonight. Maybe it'll just be an ongoing thing. We'll figure it out. But it is allowing people to come in, and there's a couple people on the line. Go ahead and press 1 if you want to talk. 646-381-4990 is the number to call. You can listen live on your phone, or you can, you know, join the roundtable, however you want to do it. Let's get to the rest of that card, though, the Showtime card, triple header from this last Saturday. The other two fights were Jermell Charlo and Harry Joe Yargi, a veteran guy, and then also Telchik Aydin against Jesus Soto Carras. And this fight, to me, was going to steal the weekend. And I don't know if it stole the weekend, to be honest with you, because the Friday night fights card from top to bottom, especially the co-feature, I think that probably stole the weekend, to be honest with you. Both those fights, the main event and the co-feature, were very, very solid. So, but, you know, I mean, it's still what all right, so I'm getting another text from somebody saying that I'm breaking up. Hopefully, if it keeps happening, I'm going to reboot some things and we'll figure it out. But either way, I don't know, it sounds like it's okay. I just got a text from that same person and they said it's okay now. So either way, I did think the Aydin, and it used to be Aydin and it was Aydin, now it's Aydin, I guess. So Celtic Aydin, the unbeaten guy, previously unbeaten until, what was it, August, and Robert Guerrero beat him. But Jesus Soto Carras, I mean, that fight I thought would take the weekend, and it was still a really good fight. I mean, Soto Carras at 147 is just that much more effective. I mean, that's what it comes down to. He's that much more effective. He is very effective at this weight class. I mean, the Maidana fight, and when I say effective, I mean, he's a tough son of a gun, let's put it that way. I'm not going to sit there and say that, you know, he's going to win a title and be a top five guy at the weight class. But as far as a solid fight and as far as ongoing action, I mean, he usually brings it win, lose, or draw, obviously. There's no doubt about that. But in this fight, you know, a lot of people were picking Aydin. You know, and if, you know, I understand why. I mean, I get it. A lot of people just assume that, you know, that he's just kind of a journeyman type guy. And in a lot of ways he is. But, you know, he's a guy that to just call him a journeyman is, I still think it's kind of shortened. You know, he's just a veteran I think he's a veteran fighter. I think he's a solid guy still, because if you look at it, Mike Jones, who turned out to be not all that, but still, Mike Jones hit him, with like 80 straight punches in a fight and couldn't take him out, even though it looked like he was going to take him out. Couldn't take him out. And, you know, he was able to get a draw of that fight. I mean, in the Maidana fight, it was back and forth, and it looked at times that Soto Carrasco was walking him down. I mean, he was walking him down. So, you know, he lost the fight, and it was a stoppage and whatnot. But, I mean, still, he comes to fight. And Aydin is a guy that a lot of people talked up before he got his opportunity. And he showed a lot of skill, or not, I shouldn't say skill, but a lot of heart and a lot of power coming up. And he did get ducked for a while, or at least got put on the back burner, no doubt about it. But a lot of people were picking him and kind of just overlooking Soto Carrasco. And I can understand that, but I honestly knew he'd have a size difference, and you saw the size difference in the Maidana fight. And I think he was 8 to 10 pounds heavier. I believe, actually, let me check my notes. I think I wrote it down. 8 pounds. He was 8 pounds heavier, which, you know, has something to do with it. But not just that, but Aydin, you know, he's a guy that is a one-trick pony. You know, he doesn't jab much. He just doesn't. He doesn't jab much at all. And he just swings for the fences. And that makes for a fun fight to watch. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, it also makes for a one-dimensional fighter. And a lot of people would say maybe the same thing about Soto Carrasco, but I think they'd be wrong because, you know, he's shown he can box in the past. He's definitely shown that. And he showed – and I'm not going to sit there and say he can outbox a lot of people. Don't get it twisted. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that the guy has a jab, and at times he gets himself into brawls, and that's, you know, his style as well. So there's nothing wrong with that. But overall, going into the fight, I just saw a lot of people going for Aydin, and I felt like they were, you know – I didn't think I was even going out on that much of a limb by picking him. Jesus Soto Carrasco. But either way, let's get into the fight. You know, there was no feeling out. And that's what I liked about this fight. That's why I thought the fight would, you know, steal the weekend and definitely live up to it, because there was not going to be any feeling out. And guess what? There was no feeling out. It was, they got right to it. They got right to it. It was a close round, a two-way round. But to me, you know, it was the aggression late, that really, you know, to me, won the round for Carrasco. Second round, he had his jab going, and the right hand of the body in the second round was being established. And it was something that you'd see more of in general. The third round, you know, he had that jab going. He started showing what I love from guys that get into brawls and like to put the pressure on their opponent. But, you know, he was patient with the smart pressure. He had a little bit of the inside and a little bit of the outside game going. And, you know, in these type of fights, you know, that we talk about that are close fights to call, 50-50 type fights, or at least just two guys that like to brawl and get in the brawls, you know, the little things are the difference in the fight. In a guy that can throw a jab or set up his punches, that's who usually gets it done. And just overall, more pressure. The first four rounds, I gave to Soto Carrasco. I just felt like, you know, overall, he just was creating more pressure. I did give Aydin the fifth round. I thought he had a great close of the round. It was a great close overall, but, I mean, he landed, it was his best round. He landed some looping right hands. And, you know, he's good at, you know, he's good at those punches. The only thing was, is even in the rounds that he was winning, I gave him the fifth, I gave him the eighth, I gave him the ninth. He did start to pick it up more in the eighth, a little later in that thing. But even the fifth round and some of the early rounds, he would land a looping left or right hook, but then that's it. And usually it was just one at a time. And that was the problem, where there was a constant pressure being applied by Carrasco throughout the whole fight. And really, after that fifth round, right? I mean, he basically shut that off real quick. He shut it off because he was dominant in that sixth round. Cross came out and just dominated him. And then the left hand started coming out more. I thought, you know, midway through the fight and later in the fight, seventh round even, you could just see, I thought it was a great performance overall by Jesus Silva Cross. I mean, it was a good all-purposed fight and performance. But I got to say, you know, he did, even in close rounds, he won some close rounds. But then Aydin really started, you know, coming back, and he landed some bigger shots. And, you know, he started actually, you know, I'm not going to sit there and say he had his jab going that much, but he actually got his 1-2 on. He started putting his punches together in the eighth and ninth round and a jab right hand. And, you know, another key is, you know, we talk about his looping punches, but they seemed to get a little straighter as the fight went on. And I don't know if it was just frustration or he finally listened to his corner, whatever the case may be, but I did notice that he actually started punching a lot straighter. But, you know, the 10th round, left hooks, bigger shots, the jab was working again for Cross. Cross won the fight. Two refs had a 97-93, and then there was a 95. I believe there's a 95-95. Cross just, he outworked him and outpower shot him. Overall, to the head and the body. I mean, Cross threw 950 punches, and Aydin threw 523. And 523, by the way, is not that bad, you know what I mean? But really the jab, the left hook to the body, the pressure with patience, like I mentioned, was big. And, you know, Aydin, once again, no jab. You know, I talked about a little bit later, he got, you know, I think it was the round, did I say that was, the ninth round? I think that was one of his best rounds, if not his best round. Servo, he didn't have a jab, he loops his punches, it's the same thing, and not just that, but when he loops his punches, right, he'll leap at times, and he gets off balance, so he puts himself in bad position just to get hit, you know, coming back. So sometimes they get a punch off, but then boom, he'll just, you know, he'll just not be able to, you know, protect himself coming back. So good fight. Aydin, who knows where he's going to go. He's probably going to go back to Turkey and other places where he's fought in the past and kind of build himself back up. He put in, you know, he showed he's got heart. He showed he's got a chin, you know. So he came and had two solid fights here. And I thought that he, you know, he had a good performance. But Jesus Silva Cross, another guy that just won't go away. And you got to love a guy like that. You know, he look, I think he has six losses. Excuse me, some tough losses in there, but overall, you know, he's a guy that at 147 is going to give a lot of people a good, solid fight. That's what he's going to do. And so overall, I thought it was a good fight. Didn't steal the show for the weekend, but it was a very, very good fight. And by the way, last week, if you thought I maybe just skipped a week, I had some scheduling conflict with the fighter that I had on, and I had already said that I, you know, I had already booked him, and so I decided to do a Thursday show. So I did do a show last week. I did it Thursday afternoon. You know, in the last 6 months, usually it's been either issues for my scheduling or a lot of times it's been Blog Talk, a couple times anyway, where I've had to do the show at different times, either a Thursday or Friday afternoon. So once in a while, like I mentioned before in the past, I will do that if I'm having any kind of issue or scheduling issue. But, you know, a lot of times it'll be the fighter as well. So, you know, it just worked out better. I had Caleb Truex, who's a contender at 160. He had a fight over a kind of a well-known Matt Vanda. Matt Vanda is known for that draw with Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. A lot of people thought he won that fight. Just a journeyman-type guy, but you know, was at the Minneapolis Convention Center. We had a good interview. We hadn't had him on the show in quite some time. So, you know, I talked to him about, you know, the last 16 months. I talked to him about the big showbox fight with Jermaine Taylor and what he learned out of that. I talked about his recent fight. And just in general, his plans going on. So if you didn't get a chance to listen, and also obviously a lot of recap from last, you know, the last week and the week before, I should say. So check that out. It's definitely available on archive right now. You know, a lot of news topics, of course. But, yeah, that interview was really solid. It's right at the beginning of the show as well. So if you didn't check that out last week, make sure you check that out. I thought I was going to have to do a Thursday afternoon show again. Excuse me. So luckily, you know, luckily I wasn't. This, we're having some crazy weather here in Minnesota, man. It goes from, like, 37 degrees to below zero in a matter of days, sometimes during the day. But we're going through another climate change here all of a sudden. So it's getting pretty cold out, and I just can't get rid of this cold all the way. So excuse myself if I'm coughing a little too much and whatnot. But CT, did you get a chance to see that Iden versus Jesus Soto Cross? And if so, what'd you think of it?
Yeah, I did get a chance to see it. I thought Kolos was going to lose this fight, but, you know, like you said, he's a veteran. You know, I like the way he switched it up. I like the way he went upstairs, downstairs. He really stayed focused in his fight, and that's what I was impressed with. You know, he didn't let himself get into a brawl at times like he did with Maidana. He stayed focused. You know, he used his range, and he swept those last three rounds. You know, it just seems like he wanted it more. He had more in the bag than Iden did. And it's bad for Iden because, you know, this guy had opportunities, you know, when Berto was ducking him back in the day when, you know, he would step aside two or three fights, you know, not to get a shot against Berto, and he wanted that shot. But, you know, I give Colosso a lot of credit. You know, he showed me that he had heart. He showed me he had pretty good boxing skills. And, you know, he's on the high right now. I want to see, you know, who he fights next. If he can show that type of boxing skills in his next fight, you know, he might end up winning that fight too. He punches pretty good. He can brawl and he can box. And, you know, being a veteran, you know, he had, you know, little tricks here and there. So, you know, good fight.
Yeah, one thing we do know is he's going to get another fight, and then after that, he's going to get another one, and another one, because he's TV-friendly. You never know what he's going to do. And you never know what he's going to do. Not like he's a, you know, a wild card, but in a sense, he's a wild card in the idea of, you know, what he's going to come with, no doubt about that. So it will be interesting, CT, and you know, we talk about, you know, Malignaggi and him would be kind of a fun fight, to be honest with. That'd be a really fun fight, if you ask me. But it'll be interesting to see where he goes in his next fight. On the opening card there, for that Showtime triple header that turned out to be pretty solid, Gary Joe Yorgi, a guy that is a veteran guy. We're talking about veteran guys. Is a guy that on the top levels hasn't performed that well. To be just, you know, honest. He just really hasn't. He got in there and got in with Angulo and got out quick. And actually, Angulo, man, he put the eyes, like, all funky. He made his eyes, like, go in the back of his head. It was pretty nasty against that. It was big, big punches that Angulo landed on him. But no matter what, for a young fighter, he's been in there. For Charlo, it's still a good test, because he's at least been in there with guys at the world level, and, you know, he's definitely shown that he can fight a little bit anyway. But Jermell Charlo, 19-0, now 20-0 with 10 KOs, just coming right out. You know, I thought both of them landed some good shots in that first round. I thought that Charlo was busier, but then that second round, two knockdowns in that round to score a 10-7 round for Charlo. Left hook for the first knockdown, then an overhand right that was just money for the second one. And the right hand throughout that round was just dominant. I mean, he dominated that round. Round three, he started getting that stiff jab going, and he really has a nice jab. You know, both Charlo brothers have a nice jab. Both of them have a lot of skill. I thought the right hand, once again, came out. Once in a while, he would go to the body. I thought overall he probably could have used that, you know, a little more. But he's still, you know, he's a young guy. He's still improving. But I thought he did go to the body. I'm not saying he didn't go to the body, but I thought, you know, maybe we could see a little bit more out of him. But he had that great jab going for the third and fourth. In that fourth round, he landed just two laser-like jabs, and then, bam, right hand that just snapped Yorgi's head back. It was looking pretty dominant. Then there was moments where you're like, huh, he's kind of put in cruise control. At least that's what they were saying, but I didn't totally see that. In fact, in the sixth round, he landed some punishing body shots early in the round. Then I think in the sixth round, it did slow in that sixth round a little bit. But in the seventh round, jab, then the right hand for the KO right on the cheek. But, you know, came down to the jab, left hook, you know, overall left hook and the overhand and straight right hands were the key for Charlo. And now Charlo's put some victories together. You know, both Charlo brothers have come up and looked good, but to be honest with you, they didn't necessarily look like they could punch. I'm just being honest. And sometimes you see this. You know, you see some guys that are trying to get out of that amateur style. So they got a lot of skill, and maybe for the first four rounds they look dominant, and they're like, okay, now what? Can you bring it up a notch and try to get this guy out or you know, get a little more active? And you know, the jab is set up now, so go on from there. And I got to say that both of them, they had a touch of that on the way up. But now that they've, you know, especially Jermell, you know, he's starting to come on, and now he's at 20 fights. So you can see this last year, he's improved a whole lot. He's pretty sharp, and I like what I see. Another 154 young guy. CT, what'd you think of the performance? Jermell Charlo in the past, I'd say the last 2 years, you've seen, especially this last year, though, you've seen some improvement. We knew he had skill, but now he's really starting to sit down on some of his punches and not just jab and dominate the fight that way. He's really starting to throw the other big punches.
Oh, yeah. I saw a little bit of that fight. But from what I can see, like, he's very quick, very athletic, and very accurate. And like you said, I like the way he brings punches behind that jab. So it's a very good, quick, stiff jab. And I like the way he didn't rush. You know, he didn't rush into it. He got the knockdowns early. He took his time, you know. And then got the stoppage mid to, you know, late in the fight. Very impressed. I would like to see who he fights next. Like you said, a good up-and-coming 154-pound fighter. There's a few fighters they can fight in that division. Maybe Delvin Rodriguez, something like that. You know, have him tested against someone along them lengths.
Yeah, it's a good call, and it'll be interesting because they are going to have to start stepping them up slowly but surely. Obviously, this is a step up to an extent. But, yeah, I got to say, I've definitely seen some improvement out of him. I've definitely seen it. And like I said, it was just a touch. It's no big I'm not trying to put the guy down or nothing like that. We've had him on the show a couple times. We've had a lot of talk about it, and you see that with skilled guys and guys that have had good amateur careers. Sometimes they got to get that out of their system. And once they get out of their system, they can start to sit down on punches. But I talked about it last show, too. I don't mind guys that take their time. I mean, think about it. I mean, a lot of people, you know, were given Mikey Garcia, you know, a hard time, you know. I mean, they're giving him a really hard time. And to me, it just because the guy's not knocking him out in the fourth round or not going for the kill that early in a fight, to me, you need more fighters like that. Of course, I like to see knockouts. I mean, come on now. But it just, to me, it's I like that. I do like when a guy takes his time and slowly but surely, you know, finishes it. Not slowly necessarily, but you know, I don't mind that because that's what you're going to need at the top levels of this sport. You know, that's what it comes down to anyway. Those type of things, you need that. You definitely need that. So, but overall, we'll see where he goes. Man, Golden Boy is just really keeps improving their prospect stock. You know, they've for a while, they obviously lived off Oscar's name. some big fights Oscar would be involved in. And then they started getting some vets like Juan Manuel Marquez, and they had Juan Diaz. And, you know, they started putting a nice squad together, but, you know, it takes a while with prospects, and now you can tell that they're really starting to get going because they got a lot of prospects under there, and they can make in-house fights, which is always, you know, important. You don't want to be kind of the run that top rank has shown. You know, you don't want to always do it in-house, but it is nice to be able to have some of that in-house talent and at some point, you know, face each other. You can't have that. You can't have it to where, you know, you don't want to protect your guys too much, and just because they're your guys, you still got to fight. You know, you still got to prove you're right and all that. So they've shown that they'll put guys who have, you know, something on the line to risk in there. Now we'll see if they do that to Canelo down the line and all that, some of their prize possession. And that obviously is their prize possession. But, yeah, we'll see. We'll see where both Charlo brothers go. But obviously Jermell is a lot closer to that world title level. And I think it's just a matter of time. He just needs a little bit more seasoning. This should be a great start to the year for him. And hopefully he stays active. And, you know, injury free, because that obviously we've seen that. So we recap the Showtime. We're going to talk Showbox as well, but I'm going to talk about the Friday night fights that had it had a great card, man. The Sergey Zenzirik, Brian Vera main event for Friday night fights was a great fight. Back and forth, competitive rounds, back and forth in the actual fight too, not just within the rounds. Great fight, had a great ending as well. And then on the undercard, there was a swing fight, but on the undercard, Tony Lewis, who was unbeaten prospect, 15-0, and he was facing a guy that took a two-week late call, Jose Hernandez. And if you didn't get a chance to see that fight, you got to see that fight. Just a back and forth fight that saw an upset. A great fight. Great fight. So we're gonna talk about that. But obviously, you know, after we're done recapping, there is a lot to talk about as far as not just rumor mill, as far as strong rumors, you know, about fights being made. But there is a lot of fights that have been made now for this spring that we're going to talk about. Kessler and Frotch now has a date in a home. Same with Rios Alvarado Part 2. Those are two rematches that a lot of people are looking forward to. We have a sad story, unfortunately, from a 17-year-old Indonesian fighter. We'll talk about that. And also, of course, we'll cover the upcoming fight scheduled this week. And Carlos Molina, a guy that's very underrated at 154, is in a main event against Corey Spinks in Chicago. Golovkin sounds like he's getting matched up, possibly with Ishida, to stay busy. We'll see. I don't really know if it makes a lot of sense as far as the date. I don't know if this is just a rumor or not, but Abner Mares and Nonito Donaire, the saga, top rank Golden Boy saga continues. We'll talk about that. We'll cover all that stuff, no doubt about it. And then Gamboa. Gamboa is caught up in this Alice Rodriguez and a lot of other baseball players scandal, PED scandal, what do you know, out of Miami. He was definitely visiting a wellness center, I guess you could say. And some of the details that are out is pretty, I can't say shocking these days, but pretty detailed in the way of, you know, it doesn't look good for him, let's put it that way. But so there's a lot to talk about. We're going to get into all of that, but we're still going to, you know, we're still in recap mode. I'm going to go ahead and try to, there's a couple callers here, and I'm going to go ahead and try to bring them in and see. I know we were having a little issues with that, but there we go. I have two 860s, so CT, I'm not talking to you on this one, all right? But 860, you're live on Ropa-Dope Radio. Who's this? 860. Okay. Oh, wow. There's like four phones. phone calls that just dropped simultaneously when I did that. So it may be an issue where don't press one, but then I won't know if you want to talk. So that's not going to work too. But every once in a while, I remember a couple months ago this happened where if you pressed one, it knocks people off. Actually, I'm going to try 651. You're live on Rope-A-Dope Radio. Who's this? And what do you want to talk about? You want to talk about some recap? You want to talk about an upcoming fight that just got made? You want to talk about Mayweather? You want to talk about Nonito Donaire, Mahrez? What do you want to talk about, 651? You there? Let me just check here. CT, you there, right?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yep, okay. Okay, we got that. So I apologize. I'm going to go ahead and reboot. Let me go ahead and reboot the screen again. Make sure if you do get knocked off, make sure you give a ring back, and I'll see. A lot of times, you know, it's just something quick that if I just reboot it, you know, it usually is. Usually it's all good here. You know, there was a Friday night fight card that we're going to talk about right now. I'm just trying to make sure. Interesting. All right, well, for some reason, but I don't really know exactly why. All right, well, like I said, I do see some other people calling back. I know some people got dropped. I apologize. It looks like some of those numbers are back. I'm going to go ahead and start recapping this, and we're going to try it again. I'm going to reboot some of this here. All right, so... Well, you know, having some more issues, no big deal. So this Friday night fight card, okay, it was pretty solid, I got to say. I got to say this was a very good, and Friday night fights, it just, you know, only on, what, this fourth week, it's provided some pretty good action, and we've actually, although quietly gone through January, we had that big triple header last week, you know, to me, this has been pretty good. And actually, CT, I wanted to talk about. I didn't think we'd get a chance to because of the schedule last week. I did a Thursday afternoon show, but what about Mikey Garcia versus Orlando Salido, man? I mean, wow. I mean, 50-50 fight going in. I believe both of us picked Garcia, but we thought we'd have a hell of a time getting there. And I thought he'd take some punishment getting there. And I thought he'd just make an adjustment. And I really wanted, you know, we wanted to see how he was going to handle that pressure. Well, I think we found out how he can handle pressure. What did you think of that performance by Micah Garcia, CT?
I just thought it was a great, great performance. You know, I didn't think he was going to knock Salido down. I mean, I didn't think he was going to knock him down at all. I know Mikey has, you know, a lot of power in his hands. There's just, so patient and in the ring, and he's accurate, and he just knows how to place his punches so well. You know, I'm going to be honest about this, too. I do, from what I saw from Salido, I thought his legs were a little weak. I mean, I know he's been hit by shots before, and I'm not sure how hard Mikey Garcia hits because I've never been in the ring with him, but, you know, I see Salido fall from those punches. I'm like, damn, you know what I mean? It seems like something's wrong with his legs, but, you know, I'm not taking any credit away from Garcia. He fought a brilliant fight, threw nice uppercuts up the middle. I picked him because he's a better technician. You know, he showed me a lot in this fight. I wanted to see how he takes pressure, and he showed. You know what I mean? He never let the fight go out of his pace. He kept everything, you know, the way he wanted it. He kept the fight exactly how he wanted. A lot of credit to Mike Garcia, and there's tons of fights to be made in that featherweight division. To be honest with you, I would like to see him face Gamboa. Now, I'll talk to you about that Gamboa situation later on. But maybe, you know, have Garcia maybe face the winner out of De Leon versus what's that guy from Puerto Rico that De Leon is fighting? I'll let him take, you know.
Valdez or whatever, yeah, that young guy?
Yeah, yeah, face it one of them two. Maybe have Garcia, you know, unify those titles, you know, or make unification fights with that guy. He's a very good fighter, and I think even if he moves up in weight with his style, he'll be a problem for a lot of fighters.
Yeah, man, and I just wanted your take, because that's a guy that you and I have really focused in on this last year, and we talked about the Salido fight for some time, and, man, whew. And you're right, man, the first shot was like, all right, he went down, it was a flash knockdown. Okay, no big deal, even though it wasn't a full-on flash knockdown. But, you know, he hit him pretty solid. Then he knocked him down at the end of the round. Like, damn, dude. And you could even see, like, Salido had a face like, damn, what the hell's going on, man? I mean, he just looked like, is this happening? Like, he just looked at the wrong place at the wrong time that night. He didn't look right, you know, after that. And obviously the way it ended, that sucks, you know, with the headbutt and the broken nose that was definitely broken. And obviously Salido had some things to say about that. But, you know, either way, I figured, you know, hey, I didn't talk to you last week, man. That was a great performance. But getting into this Friday Night Fights card, we'll start with the undercard. Tony Luis, 15-0 against Jose Hernandez. Now, Hernandez is a late call-in. We have plenty of guests over the years that have talked to us about, you know, these late fill-in type things. Sometimes it's 4 days. Sometimes it's 3 weeks. This one was 2 weeks. Jose Hernandez came to fight. He got the call. It was a late call, but he got it. He took it, and, man, did he take advantage of it. And if you look at it, this is one of those fights where somebody's outworking the other one, and that's Luis. He's outworking, but Hernandez is landing the bigger shot. So it was a tough one to call. It was a tough one to score. I didn't score it as heavy for Hernandez as some other people, definitely Teddy Atlas. I think the first four rounds were the biggest difference. I only gave him one round out of the first four, and I think that's the biggest difference there. I realize, actually, now that I look at the first five rounds, I only gave one round in there. And so it could have been, you know, it could have been, even I did give him the sixth. So it could have been, I had it 4-2, but it could have been 3-3. So I realized that, you know what I'm saying? I only saw the fight once, but coming out, Luis, I mean, throughout the fight, but he just put in a lot of body work. I mean, shots to the body, combos to the body, hooks to the body all night. Now, some of them were at half speed. Some were pity fat, shoe shine-ish, you know what I mean? So you got to put that into the equation, no doubt about it. But both fighters really put in some good body work. I did give that first round to Luis Hernandez, second round. I really thought that it was a great last minute from Jose, and he landed the bigger shots. A left hook was key. Big, big left hook in that round for Jose was the difference, but both of them put in a lot of body work. Just, you know, body and uppercuts landed flush off the ropes. Hernandez had Luis on the ropes several times. Both of them kind of took turns on the ropes, to be honest with you. And this was a classic case of one guy punching more, the other guy landing bigger punches. And, you know, we didn't have to go to the scorecards. That was the beauty of this fight because, you know, the right guy won in the fight. But the third round, to me, it was back and forth. It was a back and forth round. To me, I thought that Tony Luis was controlling it. But, you know, you could see he started to square up at times, and when he squared it up, he would just, you know, keep throwing punches, but he would square himself up, and he started getting hit clean. But either way, it was close round, great action. I gave it to Tony. Even the fourth round, too, the body. I mean, this guy worked the body all night. Both of them did, but I will give credit. In a loss, Luis, he worked the body, man, the whole fight, really. And it seemed like in the fifth round, it seemed like Jose was starting to slow down. Teddy Atlas was talking about, well, maybe now we'll see how good a shape he's in because of the late notice. To me, you started to see him slow down. The body shots seemed like they were taking their toll. They did seem like that. But then, I say that in the sixth round, boom, you know. I mean, Luis was busy early and often in that round, but Jose finished strong with just a vicious left hook, another left hand. Left hand of the body was big, but left hook was just, like I mentioned, after that second round, key in this fight. Seventh round, to me, Luis was busier. You know, he was busier. The eighth round, the first 2 minutes of that round, almost 2 minutes, he was much busier, Luis. I mean, he was landing some good shots, too. It wasn't all the pity pat, just busy work, you know, the output work. He threw a lot of punches. Like I said, some of them at half speed, but he, you know, he was landing some good shots. But then a left hook and a right hand knocked him down. And then he got up, Luis did, but he was getting rocked on the ropes. He was on his feet. I think he could have, I don't know how long he would have survived. I don't know if he would have made it out of that round. It was getting close because the knockdown happened at, what, the minute mark or 50-cent mark anyway. 50-second mark anyway. So I'm not sure if he would have got him out of there clean. But either way, you could say, oh, early stoppage, but it wasn't a stoppage from the corner. I'm sorry, it wasn't a stoppage from the corner. It wasn't from the ref. So we can't blame the ref on this one. They stopped the fight. It was a pretty good stoppage. I think that he was taking big enough shots, but would have Hernandez hurt him enough? I think so, because he was hurting him throughout the fight. And it is a type of fight that I think if I went back, I would probably give Hernandez an extra round. I'd probably have it a 3-3 fight rather than a 4-2 fight after six type thing. But either way, it was a great fight and great upset win. You know, Hernandez's people said, they're going to take this fight. We want Jose to take this fight. And Jose said, you know I could beat this guy, but I'm a little, you know, a little nervous because of the, you know, the late notice. But obviously he was right as far as him being able to take the fight because he got it done, man. He got it done. So it was a great upset win. You got to love that in boxing. The guy takes the fight late, unbeaten prospect. Jose Hernandez was a great win. And you got to love that. Underdog, I'm always rooting for the underdog for the most part anyway. Either way, no matter what, you know, as a boxing fan, I guess I just want to see a good fight. That's all I really care about. Moving on to the main event, though, Sergey Zenzirik, a guy that his only loss is to Sergio Martinez. And he had, man, I forgot if it was the third round or second round. He had a good round. And then he got knocked down like five times. So it was pretty much one-sided besides that one round that he was using his jab and coming forward with. We've seen that against Martinez. Some guys will be able to get away with that for a while. But Zenzirik is a guy that, you know, he had some promotional issues. Then he got over that hump, got a big fight, lost it. He's had time outside the ring for a wide variety of reasons, probably this last 4 years. Obviously a solid guy, straight up guy though, stands straight up, doesn't move the head that well, can move in box though pretty well, and he showed some of that in this fight against Brian Vera. Great fight. Moving on to the first round, the first knockdown seemed like a trip, you know, for Vanna to me, you know, that's what it looked like. The second one though, right hand and a left hook, and after that, several right hands and left, I should say, right and left hooks, man. He started working that early. So he got off to a great start, Brian Vera. And he's the type that gets into these balls, but, you know, he actually can fight somewhat. But, you know, he is a wide, looping puncher. There's no doubt about that. But he can at times tighten up and go to the body and work those hooks and get on top of you. Once he gets on top of you, I mean, Mora's head snapped back. Andy Lee, he was getting beat up pretty good by Andy Lee in that fight. And he ended up knocking him out. It was a questionable knockout because of the way it ended, but he was hurt. He had Andy Lee hurt. But either way, Brian Vera is a guy that's a veteran fighter, like we've talked about in this show, a theme that we've got going. Both of them, obviously, veteran fighters. But there is a guy that he's taken his L's. He's taken his losses, but he's really had fun on the way there, if you look at it. I mean, the Kirkland fight was a great fight. He lost. He lost the fight. He got knocked out, but it was a hell of a fight. So, you know, he's the type of guy that I really respect and like a lot. And it's just fun to watch him. And he's the type of guy that, with this big win that he picked up, that's only going to keep going. That's only going to keep going. And at 160, there's a lot to go. But I thought the second round was a better round for Zinzirik. Seemed like he, you know, he boxed better. But Vera, to me, landed the bigger punches. Now, the third round was very competitive, but I gave it to Zinzirik. I did think he started moving better again and really started, you know, getting that jab going. And by the fourth round, another close round, but the movement was so key, and the jab in the right hand, big hook it was, he started pumping that. And once he started jabbing and circling him, he started really getting his shots off. And Vera looked to be stalled a little bit, looked to be a little frustrated. But in the fifth round, another close round, a lot of close rounds in this one, you know, Zinzirik was on the move boxing, but then Vera closed that gap and just steadily moved on the inside. And I thought he took over that round. I really did. Zinzirik, though, bounced back with that subtle movement. Wasn't on the run. He wasn't punching and running. He was just subtly moving, and that jab was really pumping for him. But then Vera came back in the seventh round, and it was like a flurry that finished him late, as far as not finished him, but it was a late last-minute flurry that won that round, the seventh round. But early in that round, there was just a whiplashing right hand that Vera landed on Zinzirik, and it's something that it made him whiplash, and you'll see later in the fight, that's when you started really seeing that neck snap back. I mean, it was tough. It was tough. The eighth round, man, this was a great round because Zinzirik spent the first 45 seconds on the rope taking major punishment. I'm talking major punishment. It was like, wow, man. But Zinzirik came back. They were both bleeding from left eyes. But Vera started slowing up. But the second half of that eighth round was impressive. I mean, Zinzirik, you could tell he was kind of like a cornered, I mean, I hate to call him an animal, but you know what I mean? That's what you get in these, that's why these crossroads-type fights are so great in boxing, because you're already going to have hungry fighters, but these are really, they got to win these fights to keep getting the big fights. And that's what it comes down to. So I'm telling you, those first 45 seconds, minute, he was taking major punishment on the rope. It did not look good. Like I said, the neck snapping, the whiplash in the seventh round, that was starting to happen. It didn't look good, but he got out of there. I got to give him credit. I gave him the round. And actually, he controlled the next round, too, with that movement and accuracy. So the ninth round, I gave him that, too. So you're thinking, wow, I mean, besides that dominant first round, we got a hell of a fight going on. But you know what? The right hands and the left hooks started hurting him. And he hurt him. He had him on the rope. It was a TKO. And actually, he kind of just beat him down into the ground. And so much to where, you know, he was on the corner there and on the pad, and he slipped down that pad. And there was a moment where the ref wasn't stepping in, and Brian Vera had it. I don't know if you guys, I'm assuming if you've seen the fight, you know what I'm talking about. He could have gotten away with I shouldn't say gotten away. He probably would have got called for it, but I'm telling you, he could have just clipped him. I mean, he could have clipped him. And you could tell that Zinzirik was done, too. He wasn't complaining about it at all. He had taken some big shots in the previous rounds, even with success in winning these rounds. He took some big shots. So, I believe it was a right hand. And actually, if you're listening on a browser right now, check out the picture, the image that I have. I have it where he's right. He wasn't down on his butt yet, but he was just kind of scrunching down, crouching down. And Vera had a right hand loaded, and he almost dropped it on him. But he didn't. He probably would have got disqualified for that. But the ref took us maybe just a half a beat too long to get in there. And it almost cost him because he could have just laid into him. He could have laid into him on that. But a great, great fight. Great fight. Both ways, really. I mean, the co-feature was very solid. And Vera and Zinzirik was, to me, a win-win fight. I didn't think it would be as good as it was as far as action, to be honest with you. I mean, if you look at the first round, there was no feeling out, really. I mean, it was just, here we go. So I didn't know if it would be a sloppy, ugly fight or what the fight would look like per se. But on paper, it was a fair matchup, I guess. You know what I mean? It was a good matchup. Did you get a chance to see the Friday night fights, or did you miss it?
I missed it. I had to work that night. But I read a little bit of, you know, what Brian Vera did. You know, from what I read, it was very impressive. Don't know where he goes from here. I know he wants those big fights. I think an interesting fight with him and maybe Matthew Macklin would be pretty interesting. I would like to see them two go at it, almost like a similar type of style.
That's a great call. DT, you're a matchmaker today, man. You're matchmaking, man. I'm loving it. That's a good call. And also, Caleb Truax is another fight that would be big for both of them. And they could probably land on a co-feature, a solid co-feature, or, you know, I guess you could probably do it on a showbox as well because he got Jermaine Taylor on a showbox. So that would be interesting. I like any of those fights there, too. But I do hope he gets a nice fight, man, because he definitely deserves it. And we're well into the second hour now. Call 646-381-4990. Press 1 if you want to join in, although pressing 1, you know, earlier last hour was kind of a jinx because it actually it would kind of hang up people. So maybe you don't want to press 1. But either way, maybe you can just text me, too, if you want to join in. A lot of people have my number anyway, so if I'm not letting you in, go ahead and press 1. And if it knocks you off, you can call back. There's been some people that have called back originally. And if you're just hanging out, you know, I definitely appreciate that as well. Definitely appreciate that. So lots to talk about still left on the show. Had a guest scheduled but had to postpone the guest because I was having some major issues scheduling the show. And I really thought, oh, man, am I going to be able to do the show? I was going to do it tomorrow afternoon. But luckily got to schedule the last, like, 45 minutes. All of a sudden, it worked magically in the schedule, and everything's cool. I mean, I shouldn't say everything's cool because I have had little issues so far, but that's okay. But we're going to get into just a lot of news, whether it be fights that have been made that we know are close to being done or are now finalized. We have some time, you know, dates. We have some places now where they're actually going to be. We have some networks as well that are involved. So I'll tell you what, there's a lot. I mean, the spring is starting to fill up, no doubt about it, and you got to like that. It takes a while sometimes. It does take a while, but, you know, that's the boxing schedule, man. It takes a little while to figure this out. But we're now just barely into February. We're not quite into February, but you know, it takes a little time, but we're starting to get some fights here lined up. And the rumor is now that Mayweather is going to announce the fight. And by the way, man, the rumors for it's coming down to me. I think it's coming down to Angulo or Trout. That's not really a secret. But something just tells me. I was thinking Angulo. It'll be Angulo. It has to be. But, man, the more I think about it, if they put him in with Trout, who knows the Golden Boy? But you know what? If they think they can put him in with Mayweather and he has a chance, then they should be able to
put him in with Trout, and if he beats Trout, it's a great, you know, it's a great fight to, and I hate to say emulate, because or it's a great warm-up fight. I'm not calling it that. But style-wise, defensive-wise, you know, to me, it's pretty solid. It would be a pretty solid fight. But either way, it sounds like he's going to announce his fight on Super Bowl Sunday, probably before the Super Bowl. Maybe at halftime, you never know. But either way, he'll have, you know, the All-Star weekend. He'll probably do some promoting there for the fight and whatnot. I really thought that it would be already announced, to be honest with you. I thought it'd be announced like Monday or Tuesday. I thought he'd do the media day at the Super Bowl, but, you know, it is what it is.
You know, supposedly the deal's done. Now it's just a matter of announcing it and finding the right time, which obviously you do have to find the right time. A lot of people are like, you know, why is he playing mind games? It's not that he's playing mind games. It just, this is the nature of the beast, you know. You got to find little ways to stand out in an NFL, you know, obviously you have the NBA there too, but the NFL obviously, you know, going through its prime of its season with the Super Bowl. So you got to find a way to be able to get on ESPN and whatnot and to keep that news out there. So, but either way, it does sound like it's a done deal no matter what. I'd have to assume it's Guerrero. A good, solid fight. We'll see what that undercard will entail. But if you look at it, we're going to recap one more fight card from the weekend, then we'll get into all that news, and we'll talk about that. The Showbox. Now, Showbox, to me, had a classic, solid, you know, what we've come to expect out of Showbox. Emmanuel Taylor, 15-1. Raymond Serrano, 18-1. So here we are at a one-loss, two one-loss guys. You know, Serrano's only loss is to Kareem Mayfield, who obviously Kareem Mayfield is a guy that is going to make some noise. You know what I mean? He's already made noise, but he's going to make a lot of noise this year. I have a feeling that he can only go up, no doubt about it. That was a spirited fight. And also, Demetrius Andrade, who's a guy that's 18-0, 13 KOs. He's going against Freddie Hernandez, who was 30-3, 20 KOs. Freddie Hernandez is, you know, kind of what we've been talking about. You know, a solid vet. You know, I mean, you could look at the Berto fight and say, oh, that dude's, you know, he's a chump. I mean, did you see how he got knocked out? But come on. I mean, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, he also fought Arislandi Lara, and, you know, he fought him tough. I mean, he went to the body on him and landed some big shots on Lara. So, Freddie Hernandez, you can look at that one fight and say, oh, man, he's not even close to anything, you know? But that's not the case when you're talking about Freddie Hernandez, because he's solid, especially for an untested, you know, Andrade, I mean, he was 18-0. He's had 18 fights, but, you know, I mean, he definitely hasn't fought that high of level. And this was a good test. And I thought it was basically, what we've come to expect out of Showbox. You know, this is a real test. So we'll start with the main event. And I got to say that, to me, I haven't been that overly impressed with Andrade, Demetrius Andrade. I just haven't. I'm not sitting there saying that he's not going to be anything. He doesn't have a chance to be good. He definitely has potential. Just it's taken a little while to get that amateur system out of his pro style. And, you know, he's southpaw, young guy. He sounds like he's going to have to move to 160 because he was 9 pounds overweight within, what they say, 5 days or something like that. That's a lot of weight for a young guy to be, you know, to be losing the week of. some guys can do it, don't get me wrong, but when you're that young, you know, you, and he's pretty tall. I mean, he's a really tall 154-pounder, and he obviously wouldn't have as much of an advantage at that 160. And the power, too. You know, we'll see how that works out. But either way, to me, it was a good performance from him. You know, if you look at, you know, it's hard to, it's one of those fights where I didn't really give, you can't really give Hernandez too many rounds, but he was at least competitive and made him work a little bit. I thought Andre just looked good. He looked crisp. He looked sharp. He mixed up his punches well. I thought he was good. I mean, the early rounds, the left hand was the key. I thought that, you know, pretty much won a lot of the rounds. And the pump, I mean, the good movement, but he started pumping that jab. You know, he's keeping his distance from him. You know, keeping that jab in the face. He looked good. He looked sharp, really. And the speed, obviously the speed. We knew the speed would be big because Freddie's not the fastest guy. Freddie, has a jab, wants to land that big right hand. And, you know, he's been in his share of brawls, even though he's won some fights that way, too. But he's got a nice right hand, got some good power, and loves to go to the body like he showed against Arislandi Lara. But the body shots started coming out for Demetrius as well. And the left hand and the hooks, he really started putting them all together, like I mentioned. And, you know, the early rounds, the first three, four rounds, Freddie got some in. He did bloody his nose, I believe, at the end of the third round. Maybe the fourth round, third round, something like that. Let me check my notes real quick. Yeah, the end of the third round. So he obviously had to, you know, get something going there. He just kept staying on his jab. And then it seemed like Freddie started bringing the pressure, especially earlier in the round, like in the fifth round. He just started bringing that early pressure. But, you know, Andre responded. And he brought the fight to him as well. And, you know, he finished with some telling shots in some of those rounds. And, you know, he fainted in, I believe, it was a sixth round. Yep, sixth round, he fainted with left hand, lead left, and just bam, right hand, knocked down. I think it was just past a minute left in the round. And he landed more left hands on the rope. He had him buzzing. Freddie, veteran move here. Definitely veteran move. Freddie spit his mouthpiece out. He was in trouble in that sixth round. And it said, they say a grand total of 37 seconds had saved him. So Freddie, that was smart. In the seventh round, right after that, though, Freddie came out strong early. I mean, he was trying to bring it. But Demetrius, you know, he was pot-shotting him on the outside, and he was switching orthodox at times. Southpaw, orthodox back and forth. So he looked good. Ninth round, great right uppercut, walked right into it, froze Freddie right in his tracks. I mean, it froze. He walked right into it. He was looking to finish. Early in that 10th round, some thudding punches early. Overall, though, I mean, you know, the jab, the straight left hand, hooks to the body, you know, he showed some defense. He countered well, that distance, like I mentioned. Freddie showed his heart and chin like he always does. Didn't really land too many power shots. Like I said, he bloodied up his nose early in the fight, but not much after that. I just thought he mixed his punches up well, and it was probably the, you know, this is his best opponent. Well, that's good in that it was kind of coincided with his best performance. So that's a good sign for him. He's now with Virgil Hunter, so that'll help him. He's a guy that obviously we know about it and has improved, you know, some guys, and maybe will improve some other guys. We'll see. We're actually going to find out a lot about him with Amir Khan and how he can bring on Andre, too. I think it'll be key. It was his best performance. I thought he did a little bit of everything in the fight, and it wasn't like he got the lead and just sat on it. There was times where he actually came forward. He maybe came behind the jab, but he came forward. On that other card, though, Emmanuel Taylor, well, like I mentioned earlier, 15-1 in Raymond Serrano, 18-1. that one loss that Raymond had was to Kareem Mayfield. A lot of people know him from Friday Night Fights and some of the big fights he's had in the last little bit and some of the names he's taken out. And he had a great 2012, no doubt about it. The first round was a close round. They both landed. In fact, I jotted down a little note. They both landed 15 punches apiece. So it was an active round, 15 lands in the first round, you know, with guys like, you know, these two. They didn't really feel each other out that much, you know. It was a close round. It was a tough one. I didn't really know where I could go there. Second round, close round as well, but the last part of the round, I felt like there was just some flush. They both landed flush, but it did slow down in that round. I just got that. I gave that one to Serrano. But then I gave Taylor the third round. To the left hand on the hook and the jab. I mean, I think the third round, also the first two rounds, like I mentioned, were close. So I think that was like the clearest round won so far was that third round. And then Taylor, three right hands early, and then he closed with some nice shots in that fourth round. I gave him the fourth round as well. Fifth round, I think it was like, he hit him with some big punches. It was like seven punches in a row. I think the last three or four actually landed. But two left hooks on the chin ended it there in the, I believe it was the sixth or seventh round. But, you know, before that, it wasn't, the sixth round was a sloppy round. And they did have some arm punches involved in there. And it was almost looking like, oh, here we go. This is actually starting to become a bit of an ugly round. Or, well, round, but fight as well. And I thought, ah, man, there were some competitive rounds. I was thinking, I wonder where this is going to go. But, I mean, Taylor came out and pulled, I don't know if you call it a full-on upset, but he pulled a nice win out. And it was a solid card. I mean, really, like I said, this weekend was an underrated weekend, under the radar, I should say. It really was. It was a solid weekend. Do the names, you know, stand out like big matchups? No. But you had guys that were well-known. You had guys like Matisse, who's an up-and-comer that, hard to call a guy an up-and-comer that has as many fights as he is and has his age. So that's another reason why a lot of people are cheering for him, too, because of his age. I mean, he's not getting any younger. It's not to say he's past, you know, getting close to being past his prime or nothing like that. But to me, I really hope he gets, you know, some big fights. Obviously, most people do. But, you know, he definitely needs to get them here soon. But overall, a very solid weekend. I mean, we had a lot of fights and two solid fights on the Friday night fights. I think those were probably the two most solid fights on one card. And then we had the triple header that had its moments of excitement and at least was entertaining on the Showtime. So Showtime, you know, Friday and Saturday as well. So, I mean, it was a pretty good, you know, maybe mainstream fight fans out there didn't really look into this and, you know, didn't really look at this weekend and thought that maybe not much boxing was on. And like I said, didn't have the marquee matchups, but, you know, I mean, it was a pretty good weekend. Pretty good weekend. Definitely lived up, you know, on the under the radar type thing. So, yeah, either way, pretty solid weekend. I will be definitely covering the upcoming fight weekend. Like I mentioned, Carlos Molina on Friday Night Fights, ESPN2, will be facing Corey Spinks. It's a pretty good fight. I mean, Molina wants to stay busy and he wants to keep winning. And it's some exposure. So what's he going to do? You know, it doesn't seem like he can get fights. So, you know, what's the guy to do? You know, he's got to stay busy. Maybe it's not the fight everybody wants to see him in, but that's not his fault. That's definitely not his fault. He's kind of fought himself into this, you know, because he's fought so well at times. I mean, you know, he obviously has that stinker as well, a fight that most people thought he should have won or at least, you know, definitely was winning. But, you know, he did clinch a lot in that, so there is that. But, you know, I really hope that, you know, if he were to get by Corey Spinks, and this is nothing to be against Spinks, but, you know, when Molina's shown that he can fight with guys, I mean, he's shown Arislandi Lara, he fought to a draw. Kirkland, he was beaten. You know, so, you know, you wish guys like that goodwill, I guess you could say, you know. No doubt about it, even though he did have that ugly fight where he did, I thought he was winning the fight, but he lost it on, you know, a random thing happening. And he was hurt at the end of that fight. I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing that fight again. I don't know if they'll, you know, I don't know if they'll do that, but it is what it is. Let's get into some news, though. Obviously, you know what, I actually tried to find the Daniel Gill and Anthony Mundin fight from Australia early. This morning or late last night, however you want to put it. But I couldn't find it. I couldn't find a stream. I saw a highlight, but that's it. I could not find a stream. I really wanted to, you know, recap that and have like a post-fight segment, but I couldn't find it. Daniel Gill did win by decision. Sounds like fairly handedly as well. So, you know, I don't know. It kind of sucks because I really thought that I'd be able to. I couldn't. The stream that I had last night didn't work for me, and then today it's just not out there right now. So go ahead and send me a link, people out there, if you can. I do want to check that fight out either way, but it didn't sound like it was that you know, that crazy. Anyway, but right about now we're gonna get into the news segments here and talk all about some news. And CT, if you want to talk about the Friday night fight, or not the Friday night fights, but any other topic that I've mentioned, you know, and I'm going to mention here in the next little bit, we'll definitely have you give your opinion on that. But right off the bat, obviously, there's a couple items that are pretty much, you know, hot topics, you know, hot button topics, like they say in the news business. And you know, obviously the Donair Mares / Golden Boy top ranked beef is something that is being talked about. Last week, you know, we were let, you know, as far as what was going on, it was just an offer, you know. The Espinoza Mars' management, he, you know, they were working with Bob Arum, at least talking to them, getting an offer, and then showing it to Richard Schaefer. And, you know, supposedly the offer was lowballed. You know, I'm not here to say one or the other. I didn't see the money. I don't know what the contract, you know, when the offer was, but sounded like they weren't that happy, that they're in negotiations, maybe not Richard Schaefer and Bob Arum head-to-head, but they were at least in contact about the Mares-Nonito fight. Then Richard Schaefer last week mentioned, you know, hey, you know what? I'm going to show you how serious I am about this fight. I'm going to offer $3 million for Nonito in top rank, basically, for the rights. Basically, they wanted to buy the rights for Abner Mares, and the offer obviously didn't please them enough, so to speak. So they made an offer. They made a counter offer to where they were willing to have, you know, Bob Arum, top rank, Nonito, split it up however they wanted to, but $3 million, they put up an offer. Now, Bob Arum came back and said, you know, it's nonsense. You can't go through the media. And he's right. You know, it was nonsense to say it. But they kept saying, you know, put it in paper. You don't do it to the press. You put it in paper. And Nonito's camp and on Twitter and, you know, management level, everybody on top rank was saying, oh, put it in paper. Put it in paper, man. Why don't you put it in paper then, you know? And so that's exactly what they did. They put it in paper. They sent it over. Top Rank said they did receive it. They mentioned a couple of things like the time of the fight and whatnot, and certain, you know, stipulations in there to where they have to fight by June or whatever. And you know, the top rank said that doesn't work because, you know, Nonito's busy in June, but that's just a normal kind of language in a contract. Now, about this offer and contract, you know, it's 13 pages long. I'm not going to sit there and say it's an official 100% everything's covered in there, because I'm not a lawyer, and I've seen contracts, but not to the extent like this all the way. I mean, I've seen a lot of them, or not a lot of them, but I've seen some, and so I'm just saying officially I don't know if everything is contained in those, in that offer sheet, contract/offer sheet. So there could be something missing, but there's not much missing, let's put it that way. And like Dan Raphael said, it's more than just an offer. It's a contract. I mean, there's 13 pages of stipulations, and it's very clear. The money's clear. Everything's pretty clear if you read it. So they, you know, put their money where their mouth is. So you got to give Golden Boy some credit there. Now, all of a sudden, you know, in the meantime, when they weren't even done negotiating, you know, now he says, well, it doesn't even matter anyway because, you know, we got to fight Ring of the Owl. I mean, everybody knows we got that one locked down and we have a commitment to HBO. So, obviously, they weren't sold on just HBO. You know, they were saying, well, we got to go with HBO because Nonito fought there 4 times on HBO. And it's something that we mentioned at the end of the year as well, that doesn't happen much. So I get it, but it sounds like they could have maybe gotten a little bit more money because of the Espinoza connection with Showtime over there, the programming guy, the new guy, you know. So, you know, it is what it is. It is what it is. At least this gets closer. Maybe the next fight that they both fight will actually be against each other. I could see that. But yeah, to me, Top Rank kind of called their bluff, and then when they weren't bluffing and they actually sent a real deal to them, they kind of half-assed it, I got to admit, a little bit, because to say certain things like, oh, we already have a fight, you know, and we have to be loyal to HBO. Well, that's true, and I get that, but Pacquiao had a lot of success on normal championship boxing and on pay-per-view through HBO. Same with Cotto on normal HBO and HBO pay-per-view. And then that year, we do remember, they went to Showtime. Both of them did Showtime shows. So when you say loyalty, you know, he was just mad because Golden Boy had an output deal. And now, basically, he has an output deal with Showtime and Espinoza, in a sense. They won't call it that, but that's what it is. You know, it is what it is. But, so to say the loyalty thing, I get it with Nonito, but you do go to the highest bidder. So however that was going to work out, you know, because we know Mars is a Showtime fighter and Nonito is a HBO fighter. But to me, I think that they should have negotiated this thing a little longer, and it's not, I don't think Nonito's ducking anybody. But I think Bob Arum doesn't want to do this deal with Golden Boy. And it's not like he's afraid to put him in with Mares. He just doesn't want to split money because he has ties to Ring and DL. So, to me, it's just a Bob Arum situation again. Because they weren't even done negotiating. He's acting like, you know, he's acting like, oh, we have this deal in place. I mean, we can't just not do this deal for Ring and DL. But yet, you know, Nonito and Bob Arum are saying, well, Ring and DL needs to build his name. What has he done to build his name since they've been saying he needs to build his name? Not a whole lot. Now, I'm not hacking Ring and DL in this situation, because it's a good fight. So obviously, if he's not going to fight Mares and he fights Ring and DL, Top Rank's smart because they keep the money inside and they still face a guy that everybody wants them to fight. So it really doesn't matter. It's a win-win for fans, and it's a win-win for Top Rank. But in this situation, obviously Golden Boy was trying to make this fight a lot more than was Top Rank.
And I'm not, it's not Nonito, and it's really not Abner. It's just the fact is Top Rank doesn't want to do this because they were negotiating, and then, so obviously they offered. Now, the counter offer was put in place with a lot more money, it sounds like anyway. And now you counter offer back or do something. You don't just say, no, this is, there's a couple of stipulations that don't make sense. And then plus, we already have this fight done. You know, the backup guy for that fight is actually the Victor Chinian. So it's like, okay, but you're willing to sign a fight possibly with Victor Chinian, even though Regan Diaz is the main guy, but they were even talking about Chinian again. And it's just like, really, man? Like, but you're all done with anything that you could possibly get now. But then it just seemed pretty rushed, let's put it that way. Not ducking. Nonito is not ducking. It's just the fact is because, you know, like I said, he's fighting a good fighter. He's fighting a big, you know, a really good fighter. But, you know, in this case, I'd have to side with Golden Boy because they're both going to fight in April. I mean, maybe the schedules won't work out that way, but both are good to go in April anyway. You know, so it's a little shaky, if you ask me, but it is what it is. It's just funny when you say, okay, well, send it over. And then on Twitter, that side is saying, well, I still haven't received anything. And so when they send it, then they don't counteroffer. They make up excuses. So obviously it's Bob Arum in this situation. But that's nothing new. That's nothing new. Another rumor, and I'm going to double it up here. And CT, like I said, I'm going to kind of go through some of this news, and then I'm going to break to you and talk to you about, you know, some of these topics and see what your thoughts are. But this is kind of a double news item because of the date and the location. So you got Rios Alvarado Part 2, which we knew was pretty much a done deal. Now it has a home. It's on HBO. It's March 30th. It's Mandalay Bay. And, man, I want to go to this fight. I really want to go to this fight. But that same date, now this is just a rumor, the Rios Alvarado, March 30th, Mandalay Bay is not a rumor. But this is Golovkin, Gennady Golovkin versus Ishida. Nobuo Ishida. We know Ishida, who knocked out Kirkland in the first round, got beat by Paul Williams. A 154-pounder, that'd be going to 160, but it said at the Monte Carlo. Now, March 30th, the same night, obviously I'd assume at the, you know, on HBO, because, you know, Golovkin is the HBO guy, but it may be off HBO this one time and put on something else. But it said at the Monte Carlo. Now, this is not a done deal officially. This is just a rumor. That's a pretty strong rumor. Golovkin, Ishida, March 30th, which would be kind of weird on the same. I mean, it's not like HBO is going to do a split site. You know, now we're at the Monte Carlo, but we're going to go back to Mandalay. I don't think there's enough for both. You know what I mean? You can't do Canelo and the Martinez, you know, Chavez Jr. thing in one night because those are bigger stars, more well-known, more established, legit fights. But to me, I don't really know. Obviously, the Rios Alvarado is a big fight, but Golovkin Ishida is just a stay-busy fight. I get it, but it's a stay-busy fight. So that's a little interesting to me. I will be covering the upcoming fight schedule. I already mentioned the Melina Spinks. There's the Fox Sports, you know, in the Midwest, it's FSN, and Fox Deportes, they'll have one, and Unimas as well, which I think was Telefuturo, and now it's called Unimas. I forgot which, I think that's right. But either way, I'll talk about the upcoming schedule. Another item, just to talk about, not really a big talker, but Kessler Frotch now has a home, April 27th. God, I hope somebody picks it up, Showtime or something like that. But at the O2 Arena in London, so it's in England. He still gets his home area for Frotch, you know, but it's much easier
for the people that want to come from Denmark to fly into London and be able to get, you know, hotel and just everything right there. So, you know, it's going to be a big fight. It's going to be a big fight, and it should do very well ratings-wise. And the first fight was a great fight. I had Kessler winning the fight, just like the judges, but it was a good fight, and I want to see part two, no doubt about it. Some other news, obviously Danny Garcia had that bruised rib. He postponed the whole card. The whole card, Fernando Guerrero was challenging for Peter Quillen's first defense. That was going to be on that. And Danny Jacobs was fighting a vet fighter. That's going to be moved as well. So it is what it is. You know, Zab against Garcia is a legit fight. Maybe not the fight everybody wants to see, but at 140, we mentioned earlier, you know, Zab is a contender, like it or not. And Matisse and Zab had a tight fight. So it's not that bad, as, you know, as much as people are thinking. I get the Zab Judah can't win a big fight thing. I get that, but or hasn't in a long, long time. But it's still an interesting fight. That got pushed back to April 27th. It's going to be in Brooklyn. So the next big thing in Brooklyn now will be Dvorak Cloud challenging Bernard Hopkins, or vice versa, I guess you could say on that one. But that should be a good fight. We'll see how that undercard comes together. There's already some talks about some good fights underneath that one. And then Lamont Peterson, I mentioned this. He's got a fight in February coming up against Kendall Holt on ESPN2 Friday Night Fights, but he just signed with Golden Boy. So that's interesting because we know Golden Boy at 140 has a ton of talent, and even at 147 in a couple years has some pretty solid talent. One more item that I want to just talk about, not a whole lot of talk, you know, to do on about this one, but unfortunately some sad news out of Indonesia. A boxer, a 17-year-old at that, 17-year-old boxer, and rest in peace, you know, to him, but unfortunately passed away after getting knocked out in the fight. It was basically brain hemorrhages, cerebral hemorrhages. So, you know, if you've seen the highlight, man, it's pretty nasty. I'm not out there saying, oh, watch YouTube, check out the highlight, but you know, he just goes into some convulsions, and man, it's pretty crazy to see him right after he gets knocked out. He kind of put his hand up like, I'm good, I'm done, and then got hit again, and then got hit again, and then walked around kind of out of it, and then all of a sudden really went into it there. So it was pretty sad to see. Like I said, I'm not out there saying, go check out the video or nothing like that. But it's definitely a, you know, it's a rough one. It's a tough video to see. But I mean, Lamont Peterson, that's a good move for him, man. That is a really good move because he's got a tough fight with Kendall Holt. If he gets by that, 140, man, it's there. It's all there for him. And same with 147. He's not a small 140. So at some point, I could see him at 147 as well. I'm not saying his power would carry up there, but Amir Khan, Danny Garcia, Lucas Matisse, he could find himself in Brooklyn because of the East Coast connection as well. He did good at his first, you know, he brought some crowd, some people in on his first fight in Washington, D.C. a while ago now when he fought Amir Khan. So that's a good look for Lamont. That's a really good look for Lamont. I like that a lot. So, yeah, I mean, it is what it is with the Danny Garcia thing. What are you going to do? Obviously, I have another topic that I'm going to talk about in a little bit, and it has to do with Gamboa. And Gamboa, you know, it's all alleged stuff as of right now. So we can't sit there and act like it's 100% fact. But there does seem to be some evidence that is not that great. Let's put it that way. And we'll talk about that. If you haven't heard, it's pretty serious stuff. Let's put it that way. It's really serious, actually. Gamboa may be linked, allegedly being linked to an anti-aging
clinic that was allegedly, like I said, distributing PEDs. He won't face he won't have any consequences to face in the court of law or nothing like that because of this situation. And it's actually the same type of situation, to an extent anyway, that had Shane Mosley knowingly taking steroids but didn't get in trouble for it. So I'll read a little bit from that article at yahoo.com and just some of the other, you know, information. But it's pretty damning, I'll have to admit, because they even say, like, in the emails and stuff like that, they even say, like, you know, cut him off by December and weird stuff like that. And, like, here's a six-day-a-week PED, you know, cycle. And some of the language is like, wow, man, that's just right to the point, you know. That's right to the point, and it does not look good for him. And, you know, when you have emails and when you have, you know, packaging and sending things to people who are coming by or visits, you've actually visited the place numerous times, that type of thing, that's what's looking pretty damning. And for A-Rod, Alex Rodriguez for the Yankees, he struggled, you know, the last handful of years. And the Yankees are all excited about this, possibly because this might be a way for them to actually, you know, get him off the team without them costing a lot of money, because the contract might be voided at that point. So we'll talk about Gamboa in just a moment. CT, man, give your thoughts about, you know, some of the things I mentioned. Kessler Frotch, Rios Alvarado Part 2, Golovkin and Ishida, that would be kind of just a stay-busy fight. I think a little too soft form, being that Ishida is a 154-pounder. And also the Abner Mares, Nonito Donaire situation, which really isn't done then, too. It's Bob Arum and Golden Boy. Give me your thoughts on some of this stuff I've been talking about there, CT.
about the Donaire-Mares thing, I just think it's very unfortunate for boxing that, you know, these two promotional companies can't put things aside and make these big fights happen. I mean, Mares is a very talented fighter who's already won a tournament, beat a lot of tough fighters, and he believes that he can beat Donaire. I mean, he just wants that chance, you know, to show the world, you know, what type of fighter he is. And, you know, it just, I agree. I think it's all, you know, Bob Arum just wanting to be a prick. Just not wanting to do, you know, just make these big fights happen that need to happen. And to be honest with you, my personal opinion, I think stylistically, I think Mares is a better fight for Donaire. He comes forward very aggressive. He's very versatile in the ring. He can do, you know, multiple types of things in the ring, but I just think his style of aggressiveness plays into Donaire's style. I really think Bob Arum is going to, you know, if he does make the fight with Ringing Dial, which I think is a very, very tough fight, very risky for Donaire, you know, he's going to end up maybe kicking himself in the ass for not making this fight happen with Mares. But who knows? I mean, Donaire is a very talented fighter himself, and I know it's very frustrating to him. The fight can't happen either. But hopefully, you know, something happens in April and you get either fight happening. But I would rather see right now Mares versus Donaire because, you know, I've seen more of Mares. I've seen what he did in the tournament. I want to see that fight happen. About the Kessler and Frotch, I'm looking forward to that. I think that's a very good fight. I enjoyed the first fight. I think it was the best fight of the tournament. I want to see what both fighters bring to this table, this fight, this time. I'm going with Frotch in this fight, but I think it's going to be very close. Looking forward to the fight because the first fight is back and forth. So Kessler won the first fight as well. But I think Frotch is going to pull this one off. He's a throwback fighter. He fights everybody. I'm looking forward to that one. I'm looking forward to the Rios Alvarado. Oh, man, I don't know if it could duplicate what he did the first time. I think Alvarado's going to see, you know, from what he saw from the first fight, he's going to have a little bit of change of a game plan. I think Rios is going to rail him into that type of fight again. Looking forward to that Raw. And to Golovkin to Shida, I don't quite know why it would happen. Don't agree with that fight. I think Golovkin blows this guy away. as far as the Gamboa thing, he's my, my favorite fighter to watch. It's sad what happened, if it is true, because he's a very talented fighter. It's just sad, if it is true and he is, caught with steroids. I'm interested to see what will happen to him and him and 50 Cent, 50 Cent let him go or, where his career goes from here. I don't know what to make about that. Like I said, he's my best fighter to watch. I look forward to watching him the most out of any fighter, so looking forward to see what happens with Gamboa. And also looking forward to the Peterson and Holt fight itself because, it's been a layoff for Peterson, and Holt's one of those fighters you can't really sleep on, and he has a crushing left hook. So Peterson, is down on his, his A game. He's going to get caught with that left hook and maybe get hurt. But looking forward to all these fights.
That's a good call, man, because that left hook, you're right, man. I mean, I remember last year the left hook to the body and left hook to the head finished off Diaz on Friday Night Fights, man. That was that's a good fight for him. That is a good fight, especially, man, if you look at Friday Night Fights, they got a good start. Let's put it that way. I'm not going to sit there and say, they're back, and they're going to bring boxing back and the ratings are going to go through the roof and all that, but they are, they're having a pretty good year so far. They had a cancellation, some cancellation issue, but when you do a weekly fight, or almost weekly anyway, it's tough. That is tough. There is some news, we got just a couple more minutes left of the live feed, and being that we didn't have, we had some issues at the beginning of the show and just scheduling the show, so I did cancel my guest, so it is going to run a little short. We're not going to go 2.5 hours, 3 hours tonight, but I do want to get into this Urokis Gamboa story, right? He's been linked to a supplier for PEDs. It's an aging clinic. I'm just going to read you the read through this boxingscene.com. I was going to go through the Yahoo, but the Yahoo was just kind of talking about how he's not going to get in trouble, and it's the same situation. I don't know if they tested him, but they at least just asked him overall about the involvement in this situation, and he's not going to get in any trouble facing any issues. So that's what that was more about, but this is more details. This is just pure speculation as of right now. But David Grisham reports for BoxingScene.com, a bombshell investigation by the Miami Times into an anti-aging clinic in the city revealed several notable athletes as clients and strongly suggests that they were recipients of performance-enhancing drugs. So this is obviously the Miami News Times, and this is in Miami where this anti-aging clinic is. There was a little notebook that dated back to 2009 that the newspaper received from an employee of the now-closed clinic. And in it, it has a listing of drugs Gamboa was allegedly receiving. And we have about 90 seconds left. I'd like to thank everybody that called in. Some people tried to get on earlier, and it kind of knocked them off. I apologize that there was some issues going on, but couldn't get the chat going either. So whoever was in the chat tonight and couldn't get in there, Manny and all those guys in there, I appreciate that either way for listening live and all that. And for those who missed the show last week, Caleb Truax, 160-pound contender, we talked about basically the last year and a half of his life in and outside the ring. So check it out. It's there on archive. Anyway, back to this. In the 2009 notebook that they talked about that, it outlines an extensive program he was shipping to Gamboa. In addition to protein powders, calcium, magnesium, zinc compounds, he included a six-day-a-week HGH regime, IGF/1, and a cream
with 20% testosterone. So he was using a variety of things. And he even notes that Gamboa's next bout is scheduled against Brandon Rios the following April, and writes, start cleanup December, presumably giving the boxer enough time to pass doping tests. The fight against Rios was later canceled, but Gamboa won two other fights, TKO and KO, that January, and it says that February. But it should be noted that Gamboa wins were actually in early 2009, not 2012, when Gamboa and Rios would have been taking place. So that's what I'm talking about, exactly how this stuff got reported and what's real, what's not. But if there is, you know, if there's some evidence with this, it's going to be rough on them. It's going to be rough. And the way it sounds like with the A-Rod, you know, they've denied it and everything, but it does sound kind of rough in this situation. So we're going to see exactly how that turns out. Right now it's just speculation, so I'm not going to sit there and go too deep into it, but I'll tell you what, man, if he's linked to that, to where he's visited, and he, you know, and there's evidence of receipts in emails and packaging and all that, then he's going to be in a little trouble. So basically, the show's ending here in a little bit. We're going to do what I always do, and just kind of go through a website, make sure there's, you know, not any late-breaking news. And there's a couple of items out here that I like to mention real quick. The WBC president, Jose Suleiman, has advised BoxingScene.com that the Mexican Victor Viking Duraz, who's 36-2, he's actually he'll be the next opponent for Abner Mares. The match was ordered at last year's WBC convention. And out of respect for Mares, the WBC allowed him to proceed with negotiations for Nonito for the WBO. But seems like that's falling apart. So that's what's on tap. And we kind of knew about that before anyway. You know, we'll see where that takes us. That fight wouldn't be that, you know, it's a fight that is a stay busy fight. You know, here's another little piece of news that would be really interesting and something that we, you know, we talked about actually a couple times on the show. After Leo Santa Cruz had that busy fight year, five fights, got on CBS, had just entertained. And he was one of those, I mean, this freaking guy, for a young fighter, man, this guy goes to the body. Him and Mares go to the body. Santa Cruz took it to a new level when it comes to body shots. He really did. But there's some rumors out there that they're trying to set up a fight between Leo Santa Cruz and Anselmo Moreno. And we saw Santa Cruz in his last fight face a guy that could box, a guy that could be on the move a little bit, and a guy that can counter, and a guy that can fight as well. He fought an unbeaten prospect, but the guy came to fight. Now, he caught up to him and started beating him and started hitting him with some big shots, but it took him a while. And to face Moreno, now, you know, I mean, Moreno definitely got beat up pretty good by Mares. I mean, he had some good moments, but overall, it was pretty dominant. A little bit more dominant than I would have thought for Moreno, but they're talking about this on BoxingScene.com. Yanni Gonzalez writes, according to the WBA Bantamweight champion Anselmo Moreno, which is kind of funny that, you know, it was a unification, but got messed up, you know, with him and Mares, but he's still the champ of WBA. But his team is speaking to Golden Boy, and obviously they have a good, you know, relationship with Golden Boy, about the possibility of a title unification with Santa Cruz. He said it could maybe take place in May, and there'd be a lot of considerations, right? I mean, he'd be one of the considerations to be on that MGM Las Vegas May, you know, Cinco de Mayo card that Mayweather has planned.
man, could you imagine Cruz and Moreno on that card? That'd be a good card. Because on paper, that's a good fight. Moreno, like I said, didn't fight as well as I would have thought, you know, against Mahrez. Mahrez beat him up pretty good. He roughed him up and he beat him. He beat him pretty good. So, but pretty much, I'm pretty much going to wrap it up from here. I'd like to thank CT for calling in, and basically, you know, CT and Steven are basically co-hosts, right? You know, if you've listened to the show, you definitely know those guys. But I'd like to thank everybody. You know, I get a lot of people that just call and listen, and we really appreciate it. I really appreciate that. So I'd like to thank everybody. And like I said last week, I did do that Thursday afternoon show. If you missed it, check it out. We had a lot of recap from that triple header from HBO and just a lot of news items like we did tonight. But we also, it was a shortened show, but we had Caleb Truax on, who's a Minnesota boy, actually, who had a big win over Matt Vanda, you know, journeyman-type tough guy, Vanda, who actually had a draw with Chavez Jr., and some people thought he won that fight. But, you know, we saw Caleb Truax last year against, last April, I believe it was, against Jermaine Taylor, and he had some good rounds, man. He actually fought really well. He messed up in the start, and that's something we talked about. What did you take, you know, out of that fight? And so, to me, you could see he's developed over the last year and a half. I think it was almost 2 years since I've had him on. So, you know, he's developed mentally, not just physically. I think he could have won that fight if the first five rounds he would have thrown more punches. So we talked about, you know, a variety of things. We talked about a fight that was, a draw that he had to fight again when he didn't even thought he lost the first fight, but he learned from that. And, he's definitely grown, and he's, you know, getting in that contender mode. He's going to get a big fight here soon. He did receive a little bit of an injury, but he's gonna be back. He was going to get in there with Sergio Mora. Maybe Vera now, you know, he got a big win as well. We'll see him hopefully on Showbox, but either way, it was a very good interview. And I'd like to thank Gal Truex for coming through, but check it out last week. And then tonight, I mean, we got a ton of stuff to recap from this under-the-radar weekend. I mean, it was a very solid weekend. It wasn't full of huge names, but we had three major cards that were fun to watch, man, in a variety of ways. So definitely like to thank that. I'm just going to kind of go through like I normally do as well, go through the schedule for the upcoming weekend. Who knows, man? This is another under-the-radar weekend, right? but I don't know. We'll see if it really lives up to something this weekend. It's going to be tough to beat last weekend, though. Considering there's no major fights. Friday night fights, ESPN Deportes obviously has Antoine Smith against, still fighting, Jose Luis Castillo. And then Molina and Corey Spinks still fighting as well. That's for the IBF Junior Middleweight Eliminator. So that could be okay. Felix Sturm and Sam Suleiman is actually in action as well tomorrow night. Frankie Gomez against Lennard Lane. That's a pretty good matchup on Fox Deportes or FSN, or Fox Sports Network. So I'm really looking forward to that. There's a card as well on Unimas from Texas. There's a card in Puerto Rico. Juan Manuel Lopez makes his debut back from his break and from his knockout losses as well. So there's, you know, some things going on, but nothing major. Obviously, next weekend would have been a pretty major card on Showtime that got canceled. So this week and next week, a little light, but like I said, sometimes on those weekends that you think it's going to be a light weekend, you don't pay attention. All of a sudden, you hear about this great fight in a forum or someplace, and you're going and searching for it. And speaking of searching for it, I didn't get to see that Daniel Gill, Anthony Mundane fight from Australia. Didn't get to see that. So I was kind of bummed out about that. I heard it was pretty much one-sided, Daniel Gill. We'll see where he goes from here. But I did want to recap. Didn't get a chance to recap that, unfortunately. But that'll do it, you know, for the show this week. We'll be back next Wednesday. Talk about news. Maybe there'll be some more movement. We'll probably have a Mayweather, you know, announcement supposedly this Sunday, I guess, before the Super Bowl he's going to announce. Not quite sure. But we're going to, speaking of Floyd Mayweather, we're going to get out of here with a song called Floyd Mayweather. It's by Casual Kaz. And, you know, he was on the show last year. He gave us the single, and we play it every once in a while just to give him a shout-out. But definitely be back next week. You guys take it easy. Enjoy the weekend, and take it easy. Enjoy the Super Bowl. Peace.
Yeah. www.privatejet.com. Might catch me in that Lear 40. This time around, no investments, though. Put my money in the 2F Federal Credit Union. You know me, baby. I run with a cash-only policy. No bank account, still a millionaire. See me in the clouds, chilling in the Lear. This a good year, so was last year. I'm the cash cow, you're a cashier. Shout the Money May, that's the money team. I feel like MJ, 23, get from under me. You a bum to me, I'm the money tree. Dollar sign money T. I'm in South Beach, like the big three. Spent 6 G's in KOD. Through, I be going in, call me curfew, Hermes shoes, with the cuff link, BVS ones, Franco link, when I walk in, they gon' blink, ace in the sky, raise your drink, join the money team, come and join the money team, gotta keep a couple stacks comfy in the jeans, that's the money team, that's the money team, big bank like Money Bay in the ring, come and join the money team, champagne, wishes, caviar dreams. That's the money team. That's the money team. In the gold stream, dollar sign money team. Ladies love me. I make that money fall. I'm a new bold bitch. My money tall. When that money call, I want it all. Watch me clear the rack and hit the money ball. You're scared of paper, illiterate. You see I'm racked up. Peep the Twitter pic. Nigga, Twitter this. It's a 1 of 10. Chances are you'll never see this again. Seats in the Benz, his money green. SLR, come and join the money team. I had a funny dream, I was poor again. Woke up in Rome, the jet soaring in. I keep a foreign bitch, they good for tarring with. If I ain't got it, I'ma order it. Gucci imported it. You like bitch, you never be fly. A flight risk. Join the money team, come and join the money team. Gotta keep a couple stacks comfy in the jeans. That's the money team, that's the money team. Big bank like Money Bay in the ring. Come and join the money team, champagne wishes, caviar dreams. That's the money team, that's the money team. In the gold stream, dollar sign money team.